Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're live.
We're live. Welcome to the best show. Hey, everybody. My name is Tom. I'm the host of the show, and we've got a great show for you tonight. Legend. I would say icon, but no icon, according to her new book. Kim Gordon will be on the show in a little bit. And let's get a couple little tech glitches, and it's time to get to business, and I'm not going to dilly-dally any more than I already am. So, Pat, I ask you, I beg you, please, I beseech you, play the theme, would you? And the best show is underway, and my name is Tom Sharpling, and I'm the host of tonight's episode. And I welcome you all to the party that is the best show. And boy, is this a party, and we're at it, and we're standing close together at it. It's not a socially distanced party because it's on your computer, and you don't have to. Wait, what? You can get coronavirus from your computer? Uh-oh. No, you can't. Not that I know of, at least. You sit back, you relax, maybe dip into the old medicine cabinet, see what's in there. Right? See what'll make your night go a little better, or perhaps a little bit of a God's green herb, as some of you like to partake. And, yeah, man. Best show. Got a great episode all lined up for you and excited about. I got Kim Gordon coming up, the rock star. Rock star, is that? No, one of the many hats he has worn is that of rock star. And yeah, we'll talk to him in a little bit. So, I says to you, welcome, and it's December now, month 12 of 2020. How about that? What do we got going on? We got, what's in the news? What's in the news? Anybody? I've been watching a fair amount of, YouTube clips of the David Letterman from the 80s, and it's a good way to wind down at the end of the night. And some maniac, and I say it with love, this guy's a maniac, has put up all these collections of certain guests, their every appearance on David Letterman. So you can see all of the Albert Brooks appearances, for example. And you see him plugging away and writing bits, and it's really entertaining. And then you got all the Terry Garr appearances. There's hour upon hour of that, and they're really great. But then there's the Jay Leno appearances. And why would I watch them? Oh, I don't know, because I got a little bit of a streak where you just got to look at it, right? You just got to see what it is. It's like the bad apple theory that I believe it was Descartes who either was Descartes or it was Tony Danza on Taxi talked about the apples and the bad apple machine. Pat, you there?
I'm here.
You ever watch Taxi?
Love Taxi.
You ever see the episode where Tony was saying like, I want to get apples from the apple machine. And then, but the apples are always rotten, but then the good apples are in there. And then they talked to that guy, John. John was a cabbie on Taxi.
Yeah, he was one of the lesser known, he didn't have a lot of stage time, right?
Yeah, he didn't get a whole lot. Well, he says something to the effect that just like, basically it's a conundrum that they talk about. They say that the good apples are underneath the rotten apples in the apple machine, in the garage. And if they eat enough of the bad apples, they can get to the good apples. But then the twist is that they're afraid that the apple man is going to say, they like bad apples there. They'll eat rotten apples. So we'll just give them rotten apples and they'll never get to the good apples. And then he says, how do we get good apples? And then John says, we can't. And that's how 2020 has felt to a certain degree, is it not? We keep digging, keep trying to get to those good apples, and then we're eating rotten apple after rotten apple. And 2020, at some point this year, says, I think they like rotten apples. I'm gonna give them a couple more things. So we find ourselves forcing another rotten apple in our mouths, trying with the futility to get to the good apples. But someday, just like your hero, Pat, Bruce Springsteen says, someday we'll get to that place and we'll walk in the sun and Buddy, Tramps Like Us, Baby, We Were Born to Eat Good Apples. I'm paraphrasing, of course. The song is Born to Run, not Eat, Born to Eat Good Apples. What do you think of that Bruce Springsteen and Trent Reznor look more alike than ever, Pat? What do you think of that?
That currently they look more, in 2020, they look more alike than they ever have?
Than they ever. Did you ever think, you're a young child, Bruce Springsteen's your hero in your New Jersey home. You're staring at the poster of him doing his windmill from the Born to Run cover, perhaps. Or maybe you stared at the cover of Lucky Town. Hanging on your wall.
Yeah,
and then you had on the other wall a Nine Inch Nails poster and rah, Trent Reznor was a monster. Rah, scary. Now you look. You picture these guys side by side at Crunch Fitness. Right?
I'm looking up what Trent Reznor looks like right now.
Yeah. That's a celebrity fight that they should do.
Okay, I see it.
Because they just did this thing, and this was heartbreaking. Jake Paul, everybody knows how my feelings toward the Paul family, Jake and Logan Paul. Not unlike rotten apples. I'm fascinated. I keep eating those rotten apples over and over. Jake Paul is a YouTube sensation, as is his brother Logan. And they do their thing, and then they are so not good at anything except riding motorcycles up and down the street and bugging neighbors. So then, but the kicker is, Jake Paul now fancies himself. First of all, Jake Paul, just give you a little insight into this guy. He got caught being a troublemaker at one of the Black Lives Matter protests. Of course, he'd be one of the, again, rotten apples. But then a few months later, it's like, yeah, I'm voting for Trump. But then Jake Paul is now a boxer. And he did some celebrity boxing the other day. And who did he box? Nate Robinson from the New York Knicks, former New York Knicks, not a current New York Knick. Nate Robinson, who I believe is 5'3", something like that, 5'5". And I never wanted someone to win a fight more than I wanted Nate Robinson to win that fight, but Jake Paul knocked him out. And I was like, that's 2020 for you. Jake Paul knocking out Nate Robinson. But you know, there's kind of a good side of that in a way, because Jake Paul now thinks he can like just beat people up, and then he's gonna like, oh boy, he's gonna bite off more than he could chew on his next match. He's gonna think, oh, I knocked out Nate Robinson. Who else can I knock out? Next thing you know, his head's going to be rolling across the ring, clear off his shoulders. Maybe Jake Paul will fight. Maybe Jake and Logan Paul can fight Bruce Springsteen and Trent Reznor. A two-on-two boxing match. Has there ever been two-on-two boxing where you could just trade who you're punching?
They could do like a WWF style tag team.
But of course you can. You could do that. But maybe that's what boxing, just straight up boxing, is missing. Four people in a ring, two teams, and you punch the other team, and you pick who you punch, and two of you can punch one person at the same time. Then you punch the other one, or you each square off and you punch each other. I think I just fixed boxing. You're welcome. You watch The Queen's Gambit, Pat?
Not yet.
Jason, did you watch The Queen's Gambit?
I did, and I loved every second.
You loved every second?
Every second. I was in it. Chess is back, baby.
Chess is back. I'll tell you right now. I said it on Twitter. I'll say it right now to the Best Show audience. You're in the market for a chessboard, you'll wait 4 months. There's going to be a lot of chessboards for sale. A lot of people buying chessboards. Ooh, I want to try chess because I felt it. I watched that thing and there's a part of me that's just like, man, I should probably start playing chess. And I'll go get a chessboard and I'll be like, oh, this is impossible. I'll put it away. And then next thing you know, I got a chessboard hanging out with me the rest of my life. Then you gotta walk it over to a dumpster or to Goodwill or leave it on a park bench for a kindly stranger. You want a chessboard. They're going to be hard to get now. Cause every one of these meatheads, every ham and egger out there is like, yeah, I'm going to play chess now. Trust me. You're all not that janitor. And you're certainly not her. It's going to be a buyer's market for chessboards very soon. How do I know that? I wanted a chessboard. I did think it was, strange though. I thought it was what do they call that? When you catch like a little blooper, an anachronism? Is that what it is? My team, guys?
A blooper, what, in Queen's Gambit?
Yeah.
Which part?
When she was playing, she had a chessboard, and one of them was the Matrix. It was like the cast, it was like the characters from the Matrix were the chess pieces.
That was my favorite part.
I was just like, I don't think the Matrix was out at this point, 1967.
Those were just the pills doing that on the ceiling though, right?
And I'll say this. Maybe not supposed to say this. Anybody got any of those chest pills? You got some chest pills? Let me know. I wonder if they're just going to start selling them as chest pills now. We got chest pills. Who needs chest pills? Want to see some pieces move on the ceiling? Take two of these. That Queen's Gambit was a nonstop stomach ache of worrying. I still liked it. I still give it the old thumbs up. And I know a lot of you people are saying what you always say. Tom's old crab apple, right? The old crab apple liked the chess game, chess movie, chess. What's it called? Chess King? What? No, Chess King is a clothing store. Where an inordinate amount of your favorite comedians seem to shop. Some not well-dressed comedians. Pat, we got a call. Got a good call. Anybody?
Yes. Let's go to line one.
Best Show.
Hello?
Hello. To whom am I speaking?
Hi, this is Chad in Indianapolis.
Chad in Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. You got a lot of tood, Chad.
Well, I kind of live with it. I just got laid off because my boss gave me coronavirus, maybe.
You got laid off because your boss gave you coronavirus?
Well, she's my manager, and my other bosses kept letting her come back to work.
What line of work are you in, Chad?
I'm a cook.
Well, nobody with an inkling of being sick should be anywhere near food.
But that's the problem, Tom, is everybody who gets sick in this line of work still comes to work.
You'd almost think that the government was broken.
Well, that might be a thing, but it comes down to management at the end of the day.
Yes. Now, Chad, what kind of work? You work at fast food?
I work at an airport. I'm a prep cook at the airport. I do prep for about three restaurants.
Did you prep? What do you? Let me see if I can guess. Sbarro's is one.
No.
No.
No. I prep for a kosher deli and a pub.
Oh, so just they're not chains.
No, no. Our airport, their thing is not to do chains. It's all local.
Well, that's nice. Get a little taste of Indianapolis.
Yeah, right. You know, our great Jewish deli and one of our gastro pubs.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
Yeah. Indianapolis known for their rich multiculturalism.
Yeah, you know, you'd be surprised, but we are. The deli I work for, Shapiro's, they've been in business since 1915.
Good. Look, I was quizzing you. I was seeing if you were a secret racist.
No.
All right, Chad. All right. So you have coronavirus?
I got my test coming tomorrow. And then we'll see. But my direct contact, I've not been feeling the best the last couple of days.
Oh, no.
So.
I hope you're well. I see. All kidding aside, Chad.
No, I do too. I'm all right. I'm all right.
Now I know why you got a little pepper in your voice.
Yeah. Minor, but I've been cooped up for 2 days watching movies, you know.
Mm-hmm. What movies you watching, Chad?
A lot. The best one I watched was The House That Jack Built by Lars von Trier.
Yeah, there's a heart warmer to make you feel better during questionable times. Something to just kind of sit back, kick off your shoes, and watch a Lars von Trier movie where Matt Dillon kills everybody.
Mm-hmm. Murders them all brutally. Children, women included.
There's a fun one.
Yeah. You know, it's an all right film. I liked it. It was enjoyable. I also, yesterday I watched 1917. That was good. A lot of killing in that one as well. Yeah,
that I did not enjoy. I walked out of that.
Why?
Because it was like watching somebody play a video game. It was like sitting, you ever watch someone play a video game? It's the most boring thing ever.
God damn. Sorry. Yeah.
And they actually didn't do it. If they did it in one shot, I'd be like, all right, I'll watch this. But you can see all the blurs and the time when they just show the back of a soldier and then suddenly the cut points are just.
I went into it with like this whole like, oh, Sam Mendes did this whole cinematography thing where it was like, there's all these continuous shots, you know, so I'm like, you know, the idiot I am. I thought, man, did he do this whole thing in one shot? But no, he doesn't.
No, of course not. That's impossible.
No.
But you had a good time with it?
We watched it early in the morning. I wasn't feeling great, but yeah, I enjoyed it. It was great to lay on the floor and watch kind of movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. See, sometimes I watch these movies like 1917 and all I think is everybody in this is dead anyway. So what am I doing here?
Well, see, I don't take it for its historical value or anything.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, if it's like, will he get back? I don't know. He would have died of old age if he did.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, watching Pearl Harbor and being like, oh, wow, this is a lot of historical fact here. No, it's entertainment purely.
I don't know if I would say that the movie Pearl Harbor is just entertainment.
It's educational entertainment. How about that?
Well, look, I wouldn't tell any kid to go write a book report based on that movie.
Fine, that is fine.
You might want to go read a book about Pearl Harbor rather than a Michael Bay movie.
Sure, but, you know, at the end of the day, that's...
My book report on Pearl Harbor. It was very exciting, and lots of things blew up. And then Ben Affleck ran around.
My book report of 1917. A young British guy, you know, gets called to run to another place and say, hey, you might die. You know, it's just, whatever. It's historical, but it's not based in fact.
So what led you to call the show tonight, Chad?
Long time fan, bored.
Mm-hmm.
Thought I'd, you know, I had nothing to do tonight, so I'm like, hey, I'll call in, get on hold, see what goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll talk to Tom, maybe I won't, either way.
Well, look at you now, Chad.
I know, right?
It's kind of a good news, bad news thing, and for you, the good news would be getting coronavirus. The bad news was getting through on the best show. No. In all seriousness, buddy, I hope you're okay, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate that, Tom. I really love the show.
You should probably go take some hydroxychloroquine.
I'm 3 doses deep. I'm feeling great. We're good.
Don't drink any bleach, though.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Don't drink any more bleach. How about that?
Okay. That's okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Will you call next week and let me know how you're doing? All serious, all kidding aside?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
I love the show, and it's been a privilege, Sir Tom.
Well, you're sweet to say that. You stay strong and stay healthy. Fingers crossed for you, Chad.
Hey, thank you, Tom.
Hang up on him. Who else we got, Pat?
We have a line 5 and a line 4.
All right, let's Oh wait, line 5. That's a surprise guest. Oh my god. Hold on.
Well, I can put them on hold.
Just keep them on hold. I'm going to actually I want to do this right. I want to do a good
We go to line 1 now.
Okay, give me one line and then we'll do then I'll talk to the big guest. Best show.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. Who's this?
This is Evan in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Baboom.
Yeah, there you go. A pride of Vancouver is Nardwar.
Nardwar. Hey, you know what I heard last night? Sorry, this is
go
off.
Go.
I heard somebody told me Errol Flynn died in Vancouver of syphilis, maybe? Like, he squandered his health through alcoholism and died in Vancouver? And like,
yeah, I think in Vancouver that's called natural causes.
Yeah, I think so as well. But Errol Flynn, go figure.
Yeah, man, how about that?
Yeah. Hey, okay. How are you, Tom?
I'm good. Anything else I can do for you?
Nah, you might as well.
All right, move on. Let's move on. Thanks for the call, buddy. Wow.
Hello? Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is Angela in Ithaca.
Angela. Who said it that way, Angela? The great Tony Danza did.
Tony Danza.
How are things in Ithaca?
Things are okay. How are things, are you still in LA?
I am. How's the rock group going?
How's my rock group?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have one.
You don't have a rock group?
I know, I should. There's plenty of other rock groups here.
Jessica from Ithaca has a rock group, not Angela.
She's Nancy Babich, but we did
make a conversation
when I saw her play about how we were both FOTs.
I'm getting my Ithaca folk confused. Jessica has Nancy Babich.
Remember that.
And you, Angela, what do you have? What's your calling card?
Oh geez. I'm a teacher, but that's not that rocking.
That's exciting. What grades?
You think? I teach fourth grade this year.
Okay.
virtually from my little teaching cave in my house.
You're zooming it up. How's the Zoom going?
Oh, terrible. I mean, it's kind of painful.
Do kids ever say, like, oh, my screen was frozen?
Oh, yes, like 100% of the time. That's most of my day is kids telling me about how their screens are frozen and glitching and all that stuff.
I gotta log off. My screen's frozen.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they say?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Lots of continuity. It's being interrupted every 15 seconds to hear about tech issues.
Well, you're doing some good work there, Angela, and
trying.
It might not be easy, but you're helping things, and it's very important, and I tip my hat to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I have a writing question for you, as you are a skilled writer.
Okay.
Right now I'm mired in report card writing.
Okay.
And so part of what I have to do, come up with narratives for the children, but, you know, sometimes it's difficult to come up with positive things to say academically. I was wondering if you could shoot me some gems.
Some positive things to say academically.
Yes. Yes.
Well, let's think. Give me a context and I'll see if I can come up with something.
Okay. Well, so I have a kid here that I'm really stuck on. He's my last one. And he never participates. Or when he does to just like jump in and interrupt or correct somebody or make a joke.
Enthusiasm. He's a very enthusiastic student.
That's good. I'll write that down. Very enthusiastic student. How about the fact that he turns his mic on to make funny animal sounds? How can we spin that?
Class clown, everybody loves it. He is very interested. His desire to keep the class entertained knows no bounds.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one. All right, I might actually keep that. Let's see, what else can I do? How about when he is off task about 98% of the time, and when I check his screen, he's floating around and playing games and looking up cat gifs.
He has a myriad of interests.
This is good. Maybe this is your calling.
And he could just, in a perfect world, he could zero in on his studies, but he is he is enthusiastic about so many things, and that's a good thing.
That's good. That's good. I'll have to invite you to his virtual conference on Friday. That'll be good.
You gotta let me in on that.
The kids are leading it. It's good stuff. They talk about their strengths and their goals.
Give me another one. Now I'm in the zone with this.
Oh, you're in a role? Okay. Do you want to do a one that's needs work kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But you want to give it a positive spin.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to crush spirits here.
Sure, of course. Okay, here we go.
All right. How about, the kid who, never shows up to the meetings because they're not paying attention to the time?
We want to come up with a positive thing to say. I know these are unique times.
Yeah.
And of course, this student, it's not hard to see how a student could get distracted.
Okay.
But we need to focus. We need to make sure that this kid focuses.
Okay. All right, I'll give you one more. All right, how about the kid that is consistently saying inappropriate things during meetings and doesn't quite know what should be said out loud and what shouldn't?
I think you could say they have a forthrightness that that is enviable, but again, that needs to be paired with a certain amount of of focus on the subject at hand.
I like this. This has been genuinely helpful to me. It really has.
Oh, I know. That's why I said it.
I'm stuck.
All right, Angela.
You do a bunch, you just can't do it. All right. Well, have a good show. I'm very excited to have Kim Gordon on tonight.
I can't wait, right? Can you believe it?
No, yeah. It's thrilling, legitimately.
Yeah. All right, you have a great night. I do want to say we have Kim Gordon coming up later in the show, but over the years we've been doing the show for so long, we've had so many important guests. This is a get. Tonight's a night with two gets, is a good way to say it. And I mean, we've had Zach Galifianakis and Cory Booker and David Crosby, Robert Blotzer, we had Sanjaya, but tonight we actually have somebody who is the most famous guest. I cannot foresee us ever having a more famous guest, and I cannot believe that this guest is on line five. This is a very private person. And they have only given two interviews since becoming the hero for the whole COVID-19 race for the vaccine. One was for Time Magazine last week. It was a cover story. Everybody saw it. The other one was on 60 Minutes this past weekend with Leslie Stahl, a huge interview. And Joe Biden called this guest the most important person in the world right now when it comes to beating the virus. And this is one of the true medical geniuses of our era, in league with Jonas Salk, Madame Curie, and Louis Pasteur. And, I mean, by this point, you all know who I'm talking about. It's, Dr. Blake Wright, the virologist, virologist, virologist. I'm so sorry. I'm a little flustered here. You gotta excuse me. And I was blown away. The possibility of this interview has been hanging over my head for the last 24 hours. And I got a message from his assistant saying he would come on the show. And I said, yes, of course. And I'm a little thrown by why, Dr. Wright is doing this. Dr. Blake Wright is doing this, but, I'm very flattered. And it's an exciting opportunity. I guess as a side note, and this will be a little interesting, is that his assistant did have a couple caveats that she wanted me to know about in advance, because Dr. Blake's subject matter, the world where he lives, is so all-consumingly heavy and intense. He likes to kind of warm up and precede the interviews with 8 minutes, and it's exactly 8 minutes of virus-free conversation, kind of like a warm-up, like a verbal warm-up to get things rolling before we get into the serious vaccine talk. And look, it's a little unique, sure, but this guy's a genius. And if that's how geniuses work, then that's how he works. So his quirks are completely acceptable as far as I'm concerned. His assistant also did say that he can get a little, animated and passionate during the pre-interview discussions. So, I saw the 60 Minutes piece and I thought he was really charming and likable. So, I'm curious to see what it is. And I guess it's line five. Do we have Dr. Blake Wright?
Hi, Tom. Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, super busy. It's a crazy time as we all know. So, I did want to say I'm a little ashamed to admit that I've never heard your program, but My step-niece Maureen is a huge fan of the show, and she said that your program would be a great way to reach the kids out there and to inform them about the virus and really get them serious about wearing masks, because we're really getting to crunch time with this thing. So I thank you for having me on and being able to address the young people out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on the show. So your step-niece is a fan of the show?
Yes, Maureen. And it's funny because she's been wanting to call into your show for at least a year now to talk at length about Chips Ahoy cookies, but she's very shy. So I guess, you know, her old step uncle being on the good show will have to do for now.
Well, the good, that's the best show.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I
that's okay.
No, okay.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
Write that down. Okay. Now, Maureen tells me that you're a big music fan. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, I'm a pretty big music fan.
Well, that's awesome. I don't often get to talk about music. So, would you like to start?
Yeah, I would love it.
Okay, here we go. I'm starting the clock right now. Okay. You know, I'm 65, so I probably have a little more pedestrian musical taste than you do. My guys are like the Stones, the Who, I love Dylan, Thin Lizzy, the Doors, that classic stuff. How about you?
Yeah, no, I like all that stuff. I like some crazier stuff also. Like some more, I guess, I don't know, what would you call it? More, maybe lo-fi or experimental stuff than that stuff. But I like all that stuff as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, is it kind of like punk? Because I was 22 when punk happened, and I did find it intriguing, but you know, I was too old to actually, you know, be punk and all that. So I was, this is funny. I was pretty much the guy at the Elvis Costello or the Clash concert with, you know, with the beard and the sport jacket kind of nodding his head. And sometimes that went over great, and sometimes it didn't. And, it's funny. One time I was thrown into a trash can at a Boomtown Rat show. I think it was 1979. That was wild.
Who threw you in a trash can?
Just some kid. You know, one of those skinny tie guys with the wraparound shades. And, you know, I had my corduroy jacket on. And I had just come from the lab. And I wanted to see the Boomtown Rats. I liked what I heard. And I guess I wasn't punk enough or whatever. And he was a big guy, and he threw me over his shoulder and just kind of walked me out into the lobby and deposited me in a trash can.
Uh-huh. And you kind of had no control over the situation?
Nothing. I mean, he was big, and I was, you know, I wasn't going to fight this guy, but it's, you know, it's a funny story, and we laugh about it tonight, right?
Yeah, no, that's a funny story. You got, Yeah, you had a run in at a Boomtown Rat. So I didn't think those were particularly confrontational gigs. I thought that their thing was maybe not as, not like a hardcore show or something.
What's that?
What's what? Hardcore?
What? Yeah.
Oh, it's like a different, it's a more it's like a more aggressive punk that, have you ever heard of like Black Flag?
No.
No? Okay. Minor Threat, you ever hear of them?
No.
SOA?
No.
Reagan Youth?
No.
Okay. Well, those are the kind of bands. So if you don't know it, it's very aggressive, and the crowds were a lot more engaged and confrontational than the Boomtown Rats crowd, but I guess you found the one guy at a Boomtown Rats show that was looking to mix it up.
Absolutely, and I never listened to the B-Rats again, except for, of course, when they played at Live Aid. You know, it's funny, I have a band of my own that I kind of blow off steam with.
You have a, who's that?
I do. Well, it's a band I have with some of the other people in the lab, and we're called Flagrant Bacterium.
Oh, so you have a, okay, wow. All right. Well, that's cool. What do you play?
It's all covers. I play guitar.
Okay. And it's you and some other people, some other scientists?
Yeah, exactly. And it's fun because it's an odd mix of people, and we've all got different tastes. We're all different ages. So we cover a good amount of ground. You know, we've got, we'll do an REM song, The Spinners, Steely Dan, Travis Tritt, P-Funk, Soup John Stevens, Megadeth. But I'll tell you, I'm having a real issue with our keyboardist, Tim.
Uh-huh. What's the problem?
Well, Tim is really into, you know, the really proggy stuff. And so he wants to do these 12-minute Emerson, Lake and Palmer, or who's the other band? What are they called? Gentle Giant?
Gentle Giant, yeah.
Those kind of songs. And it's like, you know, I can stomach some Yes, you know, like I love the song. What's the song that goes dun, 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 dun? It's almost like a police show.
Oh, boom, dun, dun, dun. Yours is No Disgrace.
I like that one, and I like the other one that they made into a movie, Starship Trooper.
Yeah, I don't know if that was literally the movie. I don't know if the movie was based on the Yes song, but that was a, yeah.
I think they're all in it. I think they're all in the movie, aren't they?
Who's in it?
All the guys in Yes.
The members of Yes, the band Yes, are in the movie Starship Troopers?
I think so. Oh, maybe I'm wrong. I haven't seen a movie since, oh my God, since like a real movie. Ooh. The Sting 2?
The Sting 2.
Yeah.
Long time ago, huh?
Yeah,
so it's not a big priority for you to get out there, and so you're just two for this thing too, and that's the last time you said that.
Well, you know, then virus study kind of took over my life, and I've got my band and my music, you know. So
no, of course, no, I that makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
So, like, I don't know how to handle it with this guy. You know, I don't like the prog stuff. Do you?
Sure. No, I like some prog rock. Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. No, like King Crimson, and I like some Yes. I like Yes.
Like name your favorite Yes album.
I guess it would probably be Close to the Edge.
Oh, I hate that record. You like that?
Yeah, I kind of do. Sure.
What do you like about it?
It's kind of got a lot of different parts to it, and it's kind of interesting.
I don't know. All right, here's the true test. What's your favorite Led Zeppelin album?
Probably Houses of the Holy.
What? Oh, that record stinks. It's got that fake reggae crap on it. What's it called?
Dire Maker.
Oh my God, I hate that. That record blows.
Well, I don't know if it. I mean, it's got Dancing Days on it. That's a good song.
I like that. I do. Okay. I think my favorite's probably Four, because that's the classic album.
Sure. You like all the giant hits on that one.
I do. All right. How about you like Neil Young?
Oh yeah, I love Neil Young.
What's your favorite album?
It changes. One of my all time favorites is always going to be Russ Never Sleeps. It's probably the first one I fell in love with.
That record's like him doing some hard rock crap. Are you serious?
Yeah, I am serious. I didn't know it was hard rock crap he's doing. It's
like, sure it is. What?
It's a record. So I don't know what the big deal is.
Well, hang on. What was that? Who is it? tell him I can't talk to him right now, but give me like 45 minutes or so. That sounds great. Okay, thank you. I'm so sorry. I had a call I have to do. It's a whole thing. So let's get back. I'll start the clock over again because that's how we do it.
Wait, what's going on here?
Oh, we start over. That's the rule. If the conversation, if the 8 minutes gets interrupted, then we start over again.
All right. I mean, I thought we had a pretty good flow going here. We must have been pretty close to the 8 minute mark.
It was about 7:55, but we do it. You know, it was a rule.
So we're 5 seconds off on the thing, and you can't just power through that 5 seconds to talk about the coronavirus.
Absolutely not.
I mean, it's a platform to get a lot of information out there for people, and
I have a specific way of doing things, and if they are not followed to the letter,
okay,
the conversation is over.
Fair enough, Doctor. You are the expert, and I appreciate you being on the show. And
pleasure to be here.
Then let's start the clock over.
Okay, here we go. Have you seen this new Frank Zappa documentary? It's made by either Bill or Ted.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one was Bill and which one was Ted, but Alex Winter directed it. I did see it.
What a piece of work that guy is. It's like he was condescending the moment he came out of the womb. You can almost imagine him turning to his mother and like critiquing the birth. Like, well, what would he say in that moment?
He probably a newborn Frank Zappa would probably turn to the world and say, "You're welcome." Because of his mere existence.
He's blessed the planet with his first breath.
Yes.
It's interesting. I don't think I'd ever heard any of his super early garage band stuff before. You know, I've never heard any of his early, like pre Mothers of Invention music. And it was interesting because they had a little bit of that in the movie, and I was surprised to find that even his earliest music made fun of music.
Yeah, he certainly had a disdain for music. When he's saying, I would hear like Mozart and Bach and Beethoven, and I didn't like any of that. It's like, oh, okay. Right as a teenager, he was already just being like, yeah, no, I'll pass on the Mozart.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, he stinks.
Yeah. He already was just like, I like classical music, but this Beethoven stuff, nah.
Remedial stuff. It's weird. I don't have any of his... big records, you know, like I've got a few, but I'll go on record as saying nobody fused doo-wop with overcomplicated music and lyrics torn from the pages of Screw magazine better than Frank Zappa.
Yeah, he pretty much had a clear path on that one. King of the Mountain.
Absolutely. I think probably my favorite song of his, you know, is, gosh, it's a tough one. Probably G-Spot Tornado.
That's your favorite?
Probably, yeah, yeah. Probably second, close second. It's got to be the Illinois Enema Bandit.
Sure, of course. No, that's way up there. That's a
yeah.
What's my favorite? I think they're all the same. They all just live at the same level for me.
Yeah,
they're all tied.
I think they're called, I see that. All right, here's a quiz for you, okay?
Yeah.
Here's the band.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Zappa, Neil Young, Todd Rundgren, Garth Brooks, Lou Reed, Van Morrison. Six flagrant alphas who all think they're the smartest, most talented person in the room. Who's the first to defer to someone else during a creative impasse?
Van Morrison would check out the first. He would be the first one to check out and focus on the paycheck.
What do you think he'd say though? Like, do you think would he make some excuse, or would he just say, I don't care about this?
I think he would say you're all, and he would probably use a very mean word. And take your pick for what mean word he would use.
Right. Probably begins with a C.
Probably, perhaps. And maybe a word in front of that word, and, or a bunch of words in front of that word, potentially. And then he would just say, I'm only here for the money. And then I think he would be the first to, if that was breaking, that would be him breaking.
I think you're spot on with that. I think that makes sense.
Todd Rundgren also, I feel like could just figure out the financial side of things and cope with it.
Right. Now that makes sense.
What would that band be called? The Insufferables?
I think you named it. Maybe Los Insufferables.
Los Insufferables.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would be like, what you're saying is it's a really weird version of the Traveling Wilburys.
Exactly, yes, yeah. A meaner Traveling Wilburys.
It's the angry Traveling Wilburys. Who is it again?
It's Frank Zappa.
Uh-huh.
Neil Young, Todd Rundgren, Garth Brooks, Lou Reed, and Van Morrison.
And I love that moment when they would, if they say they did Handle With Care, that Traveling Wilburys song, would it come in and Frank Zappa, it would be just like that part where it's like, handle me, the part that Roy Orbison sings when he's like, usually it's like, I'm so tired of being lonely. Frank Zappa would come in and be like, I'm so tired. And it'd be like, boo-doo-biddy-boo-doo-boo-doo-boo. All of a sudden the tempo just changes and it, and it's just vibraphone all of a sudden out of nowhere.
Yeah, and he sings in a way that he's making fun of it.
Yeah. I'm so tired of being lonely.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like he can't actually sing, so he's going to make fun of it. You know what's interesting about the movie?
What's that?
I don't think there's a shot of Frank Zappa in that thing where he's not smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this is a terrible thing for me to say as a medical professional,
mm-hmm.
but he kind of became a cigarette by the end of his life.
He really was probably 40% cigarette in terms of, like, he must have smelled like a cigarette. He looked like a cigarette.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And that SNL footage. Did you see that?
Can you imagine that he was a guest on SNL? A host?
He hosted, right?
Yeah, he was a musical guest earlier in the run. And then, like, two seasons. I think 76 he was a musical guest. In 78 he was the host.
Oh, my God.
And well, he was just like, and he called it a skit. He's like, I thought that skit was terrible.
Well, and then he said they should have let him write sketches or skits, which he was absolutely correct about. And I would have loved to have seen an entire night of skits about a skeevy guy trying to get on with underage girls. I think that would have really been cool.
Yeah, skit after skit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, look, I mean, he's a man of great contradictions, and, you know, there's, There's no doubt that Frank Zappa was a true one-of-a-kind genius and a cultural leader. And I say this very seriously. He was definitely in league with, you know, all of those great pioneers like Ben Franklin, Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, Gandhi, Ali, Hemingway, Jack Nicholson, Picasso. And just like these great men I just mentioned, Frank Zappa also had a deep passion not only for the betterment of society and human rights, but also for sleeping with women who weren't his current wife. So, but you know, I've got my own addictions. You know, I obsessively collect, I'm sure you've never heard of these things. They're called wacky packages.
Wacky pack. Oh, those are from the 70s.
Have you heard of them?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You don't have any, do you?
I've collected them on and off through my life. Sure.
I've never met anyone who collected them. What's your top 10? I'll do mine first. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Minute Lice, Blunder Bread, Botch Tape. A Jerk Cleanser. I'm sorry.
You're right there?
Yeah, I got something in my nose. I also like Captain Crud cereal. Awful Bit cereal. Chock Full of Nuts and Bolts coffee. Choke Wagon dog food. Hungry Jerk. Sorry, this thing is really in my nose. Hang on. There we go. Okay.
You're right, doctor?
Hungry Jerk. It's called Hungry Jerk Pancake Mix.
Uh-huh.
I think my favorite is probably Jippy Pop No Flavor Popcorn.
Okay. That's a pretty good list. I kind of enjoy Milk Muds. Shtick razors, kook cigarettes, dampers, logs, pantyhose, lip torn soup, Irish ring soap, and then, those are some of my favorites.
Those are pretty good, yeah.
Oh, and Pounds, also the cream.
Oh, I hate that one. Why did you pick that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize there was such a problem with it. Do you like Life Servers?
Yes.
A Bit of Money?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
All right. Well.
Oh, hey, that's the 8 minutes.
Oh, great. Well, let's get down to it and talk about why you're here. This is very exciting, you know, doctor. We have Dr. Blake Wright, who's the virologist that is the leading light in the vaccine movement. And let me just ask you, doctor, I know it's a tall order, but can you briefly tell us what those first few days were like when you were the search for a COVID-19 cure was underway?
Oh, well, you know, it's, God, where to start here? Well, I'll go to kind of the beginning of the process. Thankfully, we were able to isolate the complete genome of the Wuhan coronavirus from a COVID-19 patient who was a worker in that seafood market that has become so famous. And this was crucial in us mapping out the virus in search of a vaccine. And so basically, one strain of SARS-CoV-2 is essentially 29.9 kilobytes, while SARS-CoV and MERS-CoV have positive sense RNA genomes of approximately 27.9 kilobytes and roughly 30.1 kilobytes, respectively. And it's been shown that the genome of CoVs contain a variable number. It's usually between 6 and 11 of open reading frames, which we, of course, call ORFs. Now, two-thirds of viral RNA, mainly located in the first ORF, translates to polyproteins, which we'll call PP1A and PP1AB. And that encodes 16 non-structural proteins, while the remaining ORFs encode accessory and structural proteins. Now, the rest of the virus genome encodes four essential structural proteins, including spike, glycoprotein, small envelope proteins, matrix protein, and also several accessory proteins, which interfere with the host's innate immune response. And we got to perform some deep metatranscriptomic sequencing on WHCV, which contains 16 predicted NSP. And on the other hand, this is very interesting, WHCV exhibits some genomic and phylogenetic similarity to SARS-CoV, particularly in the S-glycoprotein gene and receptor binding domain, indicating the capability of direct human transmission. And I don't want to go without saying this. It should also be known that the most encoded proteins of SARS-CoV-2 are similar to regular SARS-CoVs, but there do exist certain differences.
Doctor?
Yes.
Would it be possible for us to go back to talking about Frank Zappa?
No. So basically, at the protein level, there are no amino acid substitutions that occurred in NSP7, NSP13, the matrix, the envelope, or the accessory proteins, P6 and 8B, except in NSP2, NSP3, spike protein, underpinning subdomain, which is, of course, basically RBD.
Hello? I can't. You gotta hang up. I gotta hang up on him.
Hang up?
Hang up, please. Is gonna make me sound. I gotta say, I don't know. That maybe makes me sound like the dumbest person alive, but I don't know. Maybe I'm shallow. I can't handle that. That's just, yeah. Well, hopefully what he was saying makes sense in terms of his, what he's working on. Thank you for being a guest. We got Kim Gordon coming up next. I'll be right back in a couple seconds. Pat, play some bed music or something. How about that? Welcome back to the best show, and we have a guest. Do I admit the guest? Look at that.
I just did it.
You just did it. Well, let me just say this first of all. Usually we get people on this show and it's usually second tier, third tier, fourth tier people. This is a, we got top shelf tonight, all time tonight. We have on the show, Kim Gordon is here. How are, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know? Okay. Well, let's see if we can, we'll definitely, look, I'll say this. By the time this is done, you'll definitely know how you're doing. It might not be good, but you'll have, you'll definitely have an idea of how you're doing.
And it's just, the news today was such idiocracy that, like, the news is depressing every day, but today was just confounding.
Yeah. It's, every day is hard. It's like a, it's like a, it's like a challenge to just keep your head up. And keep going, keep going forward.
Yes, as an American.
Now, you've been pretty engaged this year, though, in terms of you were doing a lot of canvassing, right? Is that what you call it?
I was doing something. God, that seems so long ago now.
Right? That was pretty, that was way back, at the beginning of the year.
Right, yeah. Yes, that was actually, you know, I learned that by kind of joining in, you can really, turn your anger into, you know, something, a moment when you're not thinking about it because you're, you know, talking to people and it, I don't know, it's, but, after Bernie, dropped out, I didn't really do any more.
Good, yeah, that would, was a, like, I think got a little less, inspirational.
Indeed.
Yeah. But I'll say this. You know what is, watch the segue on this. You know what is inspirational? See, that's how you do it. Is you and your, you've had an incredibly productive 12 months, which is inspirational. You have an amazing new book out and you had an album come out at the end of last year, which, I gotta say, you really, this is a good, this is a good, a creative period for you.
Yeah. I mean, generally every day, I just don't feel like I'm doing anything, but I guess I somehow get things done. But the, yeah, the record was, I had so much anxiety about going on tour, just putting a band together, things I'd never done, playing with people I hadn't played with, having to memorize lots of lyrics after playing improv for 10 years. Sure. And you know, we got to do 3 dates. Yeah. And then, I mean, I'm glad we got to do something. Yeah, we came, I came back from Paris the middle of March and, I've and been then, here ever since.
Yeah. And then it all yeah, got shut down.
The Rizzoli book somehow got finished.
So you were going to do, so you did a few dates for No Home Record, which was the album you put out last year, which is
right.
A great record. And you pulled the plug on a whole bunch of stuff that was going to be the rest of your year.
Yeah, well, we were going to go on tour, you know, in Europe and the States. And then actually I was also going to do this, do a few dates with this Warhol film with Bill Nace and, Steve Gunn, John Tyszynski that we had, kind of came together as a live improv soundtrack when I had a show at the Warhol Museum last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we were supposed to play the Big Ears Festival and a few other places. I mean, that's something that can just always happen.
Yeah.
If those venues still exist.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just thinking about wondering what, like the Warhol Museum, that's like a 5-story place. It's one of my favorite places. And I was just like, man, I hope that is going to be on the other side of all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably, I'm sure that Warhol Foundation will I don't know. Yeah. There's other separate entities, but I'm sure that they'll have lots of donors.
Yeah, and they can always sell a soapbox, which would kind of cover a year's worth of rent.
The storage boxes with detritus in it that was a daily activity, putting it in a box and dating it.
Now, you have this book out that came out a month or so ago, a couple months ago, No Icon.
Yeah.
And this is, to me at least, and you two correct me if I'm wrong, it works as a really nice kind of companion to your memoir, which came out about 5 years ago. Where
right.
One is you're telling the story and the other one is you're showing your story. And you're
kind of a visual, I guess memoir, scrapbook. I mean, it's not something I would have thought of doing. they approached me and, this editor was like, wanted to do they'd done a book of with Chloe Sevigny and they wanted to do one with us.
Mm-hmm.
Feminist icon. And I was like, that disturbs me. The branding of feminism is kind of it's funny. That's why the title is just No Icon. But it turned out to be fine. And, Japan, when we first started going to Japan, we discovered they have all these books of celebrities and but it's like, Jodie Foster and, just like, and they're just pictures and they're pretty great. And I remember I had this Blondie book, just a visual book. I forget who did it, but it was sort of great seeing, Debbie Harry with all her sort of outfits kind of sweaty and just kind of, they weren't perfect. Like everyone now looks so perfect. That's performers, at a certain level in the business when it's a business, and not like punk rock or indie, I guess.
Sure.
And anyway, so that always kind of stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. That you had as this kind of like an intent behind it would be to kind of show things as they actually were and not kind of.
Yeah, and or it just sort of gave me a bridge to be able to go back and look at pictures that I would have thought were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, it's lots of that, or yeah, that outfit works. Kind of.
It's such a beautiful book. It has your a lot of photos through the years, has a lot of your art in it, and it's really an impressive book. And the idea of icons, you kind of disempowering that concept. It's like, well, who for you are the first people that represented icons to you?
Huh. Well, I guess it was kind of, a mixture of, like the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, people like that, and Marianne Faithfull or Anita Pallenberg, and but also people like Billie Holiday, because my dad had her records. He had a lot of jazz records, so I listened to. I really liked her records and. She was so mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
And tragic.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel that, that sense of mystery and kind of unknowable sense that famous people, icons had for you, that it was something gets lost the way with the current social media and accessibility?
Maybe. maybe I don't have any more icons.
Okay. But I mean, you now are in, you are the one who, even though it's called No Icon, you are, there are iconic aspects to the body of work you have put together over the last many years. And you,
I guess the weird iconicness, that's all I can say. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's, I kind of, I'm in a certain,
I lost you there for a second.
You know, it's like,
oh, I can't hear you. Oh,
did
no.
you lose me?
I did. I lost you for a second.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I don't know. It's, you know, it's just, I don't really, you know, I kind of mostly feel good when I'm just doing something in the moment. So, it's kind of hard to relate to in the past in this annoying.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, what has it been like to realize your sense of power in regard to your means of you trying to express yourself and the audience's reaction to that? Like over the years, because you go from being a fan, you go from being an admirer, and suddenly you're the one that people are looking at.
Yeah.
I mean, was there a certain kind of thrill from that, or is there kind of like a fear with it? Like, what are the feelings that came out?
Maybe,
realizing?
You know, like, it's just, my asshole. Sort of like.
Let me just make sure. Kim, do you just want to call in?
Sure.
Maybe we'll do that because the connection's getting a little wonky and you're cutting out.
Okay.
Can we
send you the number?
I'll send you the number. I'm going to send it to you right now. Hey, where am I at here? Am I on?
You are on.
Okay. Do we have Kim on the hotline?
We sure do. Going to Kim right now.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Hello?
Hey, sorry about that. The way that the world works now is that Zoom is not always our friend.
Yeah, it could be my internet.
Oh, this is much better. So, so I guess I was asking you about, being somebody who does the shaping of things and, like being on the other side of it after you kind of grow up looking at these larger than life people and then suddenly somebody's looking at you that way.
That makes me really uncomfortable. I mean, I think that, there are, it opens up opportunities and, generally, the best is, not to be self-conscious. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I don't know what to think of it really.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's because I guess you are it. You're not observing it. You have to also be yourself while that's happening too. So that's its own reality.
Lately that I realized maybe people, smile at me because they recognize me not as a person, but as a performer.
Mm-hmm. There must have been a certain amount of like all of that stuff is well and good or you have whatever you need to sort through with it. But then when you have to go get back to work and actually go make the next thing, what is that like an unlearning process? What is that like?
I like to sort of forget what I did and, when I made the record, I kind of felt like I really trusted the producer, that no matter what I came in with, he would make it sound like a song. Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting experiment. And that's really how I looked at it. Because I'd never worked with a producer that way. So, Yeah.
So you were almost like an element of the process.
Well, not exactly, but I brought elements, and then he brought elements, and in shaping it, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of, but I felt like I did have some, confidence in my influences from the past. He was people who make hip hop records or pop records and stuff, but he was a fan, and I realized that things that made me want to start playing music, like No Wave in New York, you know, those early dissonant bands, and like DNA and Mars, and Ardo Lindsay. Mm-hmm. That music still sounds really modern to me, and so I felt like those were elements that I could, that were just in me, you know, that I could use, and I really didn't know how the record would be taken, because I don't,
sure,
you know, the music, I don't really know what the music scene is.
It is kind of interesting, because that music, like the No Wave stuff, never really got, like it didn't have a chance to kind of get perverted or kind of run into the ground, because that was kind of, it was a relatively small movement, and it kind of was over before it started in a lot of ways.
Right, right.
So it's funny that stuff is, it seems slightly like untethered from a time and a place. If you just listen to the music, it's not just like, it's got a weird kind of timelessness to it.
It's not jazz. It's not rock music. It's not, it really is kind of its own thing.
What was the first of those shows that you remember seeing where your mind was blown?
Well, I went to see Suicide, and that was really mind blowing. You know, just seeing Alan Vega go out into the audience and come up to you, and what it was, a very small loft club or performance space.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just kind of mind blowing, and it was so like minimal and simplistic. Not simplistic, but minimal and but so explosive.
Sure, sure. And did you, because it feels like what they were doing, like punk was this new quote unquote new thing that came through, but it seemed like there were already rules in place for so much stuff right off the bat.
Yeah, it was basically like three chords rock, mm-hmm. like three chord rock, a lot of it.
Yeah, so to be a part of the new revolution, to like spook the people who thought they were spooking people, is kind of an accomplishment.
Yeah, I think I guess when I say three chord rock, I'm not talking about the bands at CBGB, it's like Television.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking more about LA or England or something, but it's funny because they did coexist alongside that CBGB seat of Television and Richard Hell, and a lot of them were artists who came to New York to do art, and
because you came to music, you were interested in art first and saw yourself as an artist first.
Yeah, that's why I came to New York, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed something for me was kind of an escape from the art world, which was in the 80s was becoming really, there was a lot of money. Suddenly, like, people were buying art, and it really changed. The art scene really changed in New York in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. And being like the idea of doing music was that there was like an immediacy to it, or just an accessibility to it. What was the appeal for you to to start going in that direction?
I kind of could get out of my head, you know, with art or anything that you know a lot about, you're more self-conscious about it, and it's easy to overthink it, and it's just sort of such a head trip. And whereas, you know, I didn't have any training in music, so aside from improvising in the living room with my brother, banging on drums and a piano or something. So yeah, it was kind of in a way, just, I liked it because it was physical and visceral. And I'd also done dance as like a teenager, Martha Graham. And I don't know, something about it, I liked the physicality of it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But it was more than that. It was just sort of getting out of my head and kind of being excited about something that was, I think I just equated it with also being new to New York and, you know, what was a strange music?
Yeah. And you're now going into some uncharted territory, but did you always feel the voices or the presence of the, like the rock stuff that even if you knew you were, like that's in you, it's on some level, because you were a kid growing up and
kind of
into those bands. Yeah. Even though you're going into new places, did you still feel like that, like the moves, like these are the moves and these are the, like that's the kind of, like the game of rock music?
It took me a long time to feel comfortable with that, actually. Like now I really feel it. Mm-hmm. It took a really long time.
So you finally got there to where now,
the thing about not wanting to be overly stylized, you know, or predictable on stage, and that kind of like, you know, like it's easy to put your arms up in the air. I don't know, pretend you're like a rock god or something, but. Yeah, some people do that really well. And it's a powerful feeling.
Yeah, it's a different kind of energy from like you said, you're always in your head, And then there's a thing where it's like, this is like pure in the moment, stuff when you're on stage.
Yeah. Suddenly, like, if it's, the sound is good, you suddenly feel like your body is your head in a way. You know, you kind of feel the audience.
Are there ever, on the other side of it, are there moments when you're just like thinking about like what you want to eat after the show and like where you're just, when you're not in it, what is that like?
I mean, like being on tour or something, and I remember, with Sonic Youth, and just kind of, I don't know, a very long feedback ending or something. Mm-hmm. And if this, you know, and the sound not being good, or just having a really shitty gig, and just thinking about that book that you're going to read when you get your... Uh-huh.
Sure, but it's so funny that you're up there and somebody's like breathlessly watching Kim Gordon do her thing, and then you're just wondering about whether the hotel is the kitchen is still going to be open at the hotel afterwards.
Yeah, it's definitely brings it down to a pedestal.
So how has the, because you've got multiple books out now, and it seems like music comes and goes for you as what's on the front burner. And like, what makes music keep going back to the front burner for you?
I don't know. Like, I keep thinking I'm going to concentrate on art now, and, which I have been doing pretty much, but, like I kind of accidentally made a song last week with Jay Maskus, and Fred Harmison plays bass on it. Mm-hmm. It was for it's a benefit for Children's Hospital that Sub Pop does every year, and I think they're airing it this Saturday on YouTube, something.
Okay.
But it's kind of Megan, who runs Sub Pop, asked us if we would do something for it, and she put the three of us together because we'd been on one of his skits with Ian Rubbish, his last SNL. But Fred was immediately like, no way, can I redo that or something. And anyway, so we spent an hour on Zoom trying to figure out how to do this. And I finally just said, Jay, just write a riff, play the drums. And he did. He wrote this really cool, actually, it sounds like a really cool Dinosaur Jr. song that I got to sing on. And, at first I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And, it ended up actually coming out surprisingly good, I have to say.
And that's something people can find later this week.
Yeah, I think Saturday it's airing. I don't know what the site is, or it's on YouTube. Maybe if you go to Sub Pop, it will tell you about it.
Sure. Well, we'll track it down. We'll link it from the show, social media and stuff. So
there's a cast of characters and other musicians.
So with speaking of Dinosaur Jr., it's still still loudest band I've ever seen has to be Dinosaur Jr.
I think the loudest band I ever saw was My Bloody Valentine. Cause I feel like I just feel like they wanted to be louder than Dinosaur Jr.
But to me, I saw My Bloody Valentine also, and they were also very loud, and it was, but it just seemed like I don't know, for some reason it did not make my head vibrate the way Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah, no, I had to, sing on stage with them, and, yeah, it was so loud. You know, when they had that week of shows, I forget what anniversary it was. And, I was afraid to be on stage with it, but it was fine.
Yeah, those bands when,
hearing damage. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I still feel I'm like, what? What? And I'm just like, uh-oh, that was the Dinosaur Jr. show coming back to, I'm paying the price now for a Sing Dinosaur Jr. at the wherever back then. So all of the, you work in so many media, different mediums, media. Is there an arena that you still want to try? Anything you feel like you could, you'd be interested to see how it would go if you,
Well, I really, I'm writing a screenplay with a friend, and this sort of sounds so like cliche. Yeah, I live in LA, I'm writing a screenplay.
Uh-huh.
But I would like to be involved with making a film. Hopefully that will happen. I mean, I've made films, like I made an art film actually for this biennial in South Korea, in Busan, that opens like a month ago or something. But I really love film so much.
You've acted in films, right? You were in the Gus Van Sant movie.
Yeah, a couple of them.
Do you want to be a writer? Do you want to direct
I just kind of maybe want to I'm, helping write it and, be involved with as a producer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be,
The directoring is so, oh my God. So the last time I saw you was at Kelly Records screening of a film.
That's right. That was literally as I think coronavirus was on a boat, hovering in the Los Angeles, harbor waiting to shut us down. That was like days before everything got shut down. Waiting to shut the city down. But it was, that was for First Cow. That was such a great movie.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, I felt bad for Kelly because she probably didn't care about having her PR trip canceled, but for the rollout of her movie, because it's such a beautiful movie to see on a big screen.
Yeah, that's the part that I felt bad for her also, that people didn't get to see it in a theater. But I'm glad it's out now and people have all seen it and everybody loves it. It's I don't know. There's something so the way she works, it's like every single moment is so deliberate and paced that I can't stand it sometimes.
Yeah.
Like there's not a false moment in anything she does.
Yeah, and the details are so important.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where if it was like, if somebody told you, it's like, well, there's a movie about two dudes who start stealing milk from a cow. You'd be like, okay, I don't know about that movie. And then it's just like, then you see it, you're like, oh my God, she can take that and turn it into First Cow. That's, to me, she's at the highest level you could be at, Kelly Reichardt.
Yeah, she really is.
So on the other side of things, what's some like junky stuff you watch when you're just sitting around?
Well, I mean, I watched The Crown. Yes. I mean, that's okay. Kind of well-made, I suppose.
Well, that's like well-made entertainment that's maybe...
Yeah, that's well-made. My good friend comes over, sometimes we watch Sex in the City.
Okay.
Like just campier and campier, more and more ridiculous. Just looking back at, you know, what they were wearing, and it was always campy, but you know, now it's like insane. So that's probably like, I guess, the trashiest thing I watch.
Yeah. And it's funny when you watch that show and you're just like, she seems so like shocked by everything. And it's like, aren't you a sex columnist? Like how are you like so thrown by these conversations when it's her and the other three talking, and she seems just like truly flustered.
Yeah.
It's like,
so you watched seen it.
Sorry?
So you've watched the show.
Oh, I've seen every episode of Sex and the City.
Okay.
Sure.
I wondered like how men see it, or like, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous, of course, but
I think even though it's for women, I think men alike also kind of project themselves to figure which of the four they are more like.
Yeah.
I think everybody, how could you not do that? Cause they cover the four, it's like they are like the four horsemen of the apocalypse or something. I don't know. They're like the four seasons is what they, that's what I meant to say. They are like, Yeah, I guess I would end up being kind of
like the Golden Girls in a way.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it is like that kind of like, and so, as far as Sex and the City goes, I guess I would be Miranda, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I would be Miranda too.
Maybe everybody thinks they're like a Miranda, like responsible and just reliable and on point work wise. And maybe we're not. Maybe that's like a trap. It's like a psychological test. If you think you're a Miranda, you're not.
Maybe. Or you've repressed your other sides.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe if you're a little too gung ho to say which one you are, you're not that one. Like if somebody's like, oh, I'm a Samantha. It's like, are you? Let's,
The men in the show are all kind of horrible. I mean, it's
sure
women are.
They're the worst. No,
the worst.
It's really a bad portrayal of humanity. It's Mr. Big is awful.
Mr.
Adrian,
best of them, though, I have to say, Adrian, I just couldn't deal with at all.
Now, Adrian, who's your favorite? I like Steve. I have a soft spot for Steve.
I'd best just say Big, even though he's also ridiculous.
He's just so
horrible man.
Yeah. No, he to me is like the worst. He's the worst of New York, Mr. Big. Like that's like that kind of guy in New York is what makes people not like New York City.
Yeah, I feel like that show actually ruined New York City, quite frankly.
Well, it sold a very unattainable version of living in New York City to people. Like, how many people must have, like, young women moved to New York thinking, like, they want some of that? And it's like, well, that isn't real life. There's none of that here.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't afford an apartment and buy those shoes.
No, you can't. Exactly. That and it's just that, yeah, like you're not going to be working as a columnist. Yeah. And so, yeah, so Sex and the City, that is, well, that, look, I've logged plenty of miles on Sex and the City. What were the things that made when you, cause you grew up in California, what were the images you had of New York, like the, whatever would have been misconceptions or fantasies about what was there before you got there?
Well, when I was little, I had those books, The Lonely Doll. Have you ever seen those books?
No.
They're kind of creepy, but, it definitely, I carried those images with me, and it was sort of the Upper East Side in Central Park around there, and this doll, and there are photographs in this book that tell the story, and it's this doll, and she meets this little bear, and the little bear brings her home, and the Papa Bear, they're living in this like Upper East Side apartment, and the lonely doll, the doll, when the father bear goes away, she gets into the jewelry of the house, the woman. You never see anyone else, but
mm-hmm.
puts all this jewelry on, and the Papa Bear comes home, and she gets in trouble, and he kind of says, "We're going to send you away if you do that again," or something. But anyway, there's somehow these images, they're very existential looking, these photographs, and specifically, like in her dress, is this kind of pink checked kind of dress with a little pinafore or something. Anyway, somehow that was my first image of New York.
Okay. Uh huh.
And you know, just movies, I guess. Just seeing so many movies that, you know, like.
You have this image of what it's going to feel like. And then, I mean, it really does, no other place feels like New York until you're there to actually see. It's like, oh, this is what the temperature of the place is actually like to walk around.
Yeah. And actually when I moved to New York, it all felt very familiar, and, it reminded me of Hong Kong, where I lived when I was 12 for a year. And because it was so dense and crowded and noisy and sweaty and hot and humid in the summer. So I kind of walking through Chinatown, I felt like, oh, okay, this is, I loved it. Like it just felt, even though I hated, as a 12-year-old, I hated living in Hong Kong, but
mm-hmm.
it just kind of hit something. And, you know, this is very familiar. It was good.
There was a phrase you used in Girl in a Band, which I always remember, where it was something to the effect that New York is so chaotic and there's so much energy and stuff that it almost unburdens you of your neuroses to a degree.
Yeah, like in LA, because there's no center of gravity and everything just feels like it's floating outwards. It kind of always made me, when I'm growing up, feeling restless or like I needed to be doing something. Mm-hmm. Not that I still feel like that. But when I moved to New York, I just felt like there's so much activity going on around me that it was almost soothing. I don't know how to explain that. It's like,
No, it's a real thing, and it's very, it makes perfect sense when you think about the movements that come from New York. It's just like, I mean, so look, I always think about when like the Velvet Underground came west and just ate it. No one wanted that when they brought their East Coast business to Los Angeles. And it's just, it is its own thing.
And yeah.
It doesn't necessarily translate.
Do you miss the East Coast?
I would say I miss, pierogies. I miss pierogies a bunch. But I like Los Angeles. I like being here.
Yeah. You've been out here for a while. How long have you been here?
For about a year. Okay. I miss, I'm not going to say like pizza and bagels because everybody's so demented with when they start talking about their pizza talk. That's always like, it always makes me want to just be a contrarian and just go like, I like Los Angeles pizza. What? They like their heads explode. They cannot handle it. What do you remember? Who? And I'm not trying to just keep going down memory lane with things, but it's just like, who are some of the people? Because like you grow up in Los Angeles, and there's like a certain relationship to famous people and stuff. And who are some of those people to you where you were just like, oh my God, it's that person, and you're sharing. And or you're in the orbit of that person or sharing a space with that person.
Mm. Well, I didn't really have any encounters like that growing up, but I did know Bruce Barry.
Sure.
When I lived in Venice, our landlord was this Argentinian guy. They lived next door, and he was a roadie for Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And Young, I guess. And, he and Bruce Barry were both roadies. And so they would come back from tour and we would sort of go carousing around. And one night, like Bruce Barry, but I didn't put it together.
That he's Tonight's the Night. The song Tonight's the Night, Neil Young song is about
there with Neil, and I was like, oh my God, that song is about Bruce Barry. And
he had overdosed at a point?
Yeah, he had overdosed. And but one night, we ended up at 4 in the morning, or no, it was like sunrise, like on the top of some mountain up Mulholland at his brother's house, which is Jan Barry from Jan and Dean.
Yes. Okay.
But there was all these rumors like, well, actually Bruce was his illegitimate son. And da, da, da. But there's basically Jan was sleeping or something and it was kind of sunrise and this woman was walking around topless with like a fringe vest playing the fiddle. Okay. So that's my brush with,
So that was the first one, Bruce, like the, somebody who was connected to Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and then CSNY, and then just years later, you piece it together.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, now that's, it's always amazing when you realize that people are just people also with those moments. because, like, how about from a career? You've done so many collaborations over the years. Well, what is that process like for you to just see a person as the person, not the image? Like when it's time to actually get down to work, because you've done so many things with so many iconic people over the years. What's that process?
I mean, the weirdest one was, we were supposed to do a song with Cypress Hill. And this, I don't know if you remember that, this period in music history when people thought it was a great idea to put rock and rap together.
Sure. The Judgment Night soundtrack was a.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Where they were.
So I think we sort of decided that after all going there once to the studio, that me and Thurston would just go in and do something. And anyway, there were many hours listening to just a kick drum and lots of ganja being smoked. And I don't know, it was kind of, you know, we didn't want to be the ones to make a bad Cypress Hill record, so we kind of, and we didn't want to do what was sort of expected for us to just put noise guitar on it. So, but it was funny because I can't remember his name, but you know, the guy who does Insane in the Membrane, you know, what's his name? Yes. Mm-hmm. That'd be real, but the other
okay.
guy.
Okay, all right.
He kept saying, "Be real." Kept saying, "Hey, man, come up with something." Mm-hmm. After he laid down his thing, and then I went in and just had an idea for something, and he whispered in my ear, and I went out and I did something. I did the hooky thing, but he was getting Be Real was getting mad at God, I wish I could remember his name. Something dog.
Let's see.
Whatever.
Sure.
But it was just, that was, I know it's weird to collaborate with people who you don't know. You know, it's not really like a real collaboration. So, like I feel like what Bill and I do with Bodyhead and our improv duo, that's a real collaboration. But we play together so much we think of ourselves as a band actually.
Sure.
And that
first album, I just have to say that first record, especially if people missed it, that's a high watermark in your career.
Oh, thanks.
That first record is such an amazing raw thing. I was always blown away by that record.
Oh, cool. Thank you. No, I mean, that stuff, that really means a lot to me. That collaboration and, you know, it's still ongoing. Actually, we're supposedly doing a record with, for Three Lobe for their anniversary. You know that label, right?
Which label? Sorry?
Three Lobe Records.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. No, that's a great label because you mentioned the Gunn, Trzyski record. Then they put a record out. I think they put a Neil Haggerty record. They put so many things out. They put Kurt Vile records out. Our friend Kurt Vile. They put something out. He did with
collaborations, like one person will be on one side and one person on another side, or one band. And sure. So they're having some anniversary. So he asked me and Bill to do a record, and then we asked Aaron Dillaway. Do you know him? He's like,
I don't.
Kind of he's from Wolf Eyes. He's sort of part of like, he also does solo stuff. He's part of this sort of Detroit heavy, although he lives in Ohio. Mm-hmm. kind of noise scene there. Experimental scene. But so we sent him, we basically, because of COVID, we couldn't really figure out how to record together. So we, Bill remembered we had these tracks we'd started when we did our last Bodyhead record that we kind of rejected, or we just kind of put away and then started over like 6 months later. He sent those to Aaron, and then we also sent kind of individually some more vocal and guitar parts to just do something with, to kind of just mix and fuck with. And so very curious what he came up with.
And Kurt, we both have Kurt in common as one of our good friends. He's the best.
Kurt, yeah, I really liked his last record a lot.
Oh my God, yeah. Did you hear the new EP that he just put out?
No, I didn't.
It's good. There's a couple of John Prine songs on it. It's really, and there's a duet. It's really beautiful. He's,
yeah.
Now, Kurt, one of the most exciting things is getting to watch Kurt go down the road he's going down.
Yeah.
It's,
really, matured in a way. I didn't know he would.
Yeah, well, you never know where somebody's going to go, but Kurt's a lifer, and he's it's just exciting to watch him try stuff, and and he's such a good dude. Also,
honestly, I mean, what he gets away with, you know, his lyrics, it's pretty interesting.
He's really funny, and he's really honest. When you just look past the humor or the playfulness, there's so much there. I love him. I'm so glad. It's nice when you're friends with a really talented person. Like,
yeah. No, he is super talented.
Yeah. Well, Kim, I'm not going to keep you any longer. This was such a treat to talk to you, and,
yeah, I didn't know what to expect, because last time I was on your show.
You had Gary the Squirrel and Gene Simmons yelling at you.
That's right.
It's a little different this time.
By surprise.
Yeah. Well, and the new book is No Icon, and it's really beautiful. And I'm so glad you put this together, because it really is just a testament to a career and a life, and just as a fan, it's exciting to see all of this in one place. So,
thanks so much, Tom. That's so sweet of you.
Yeah, and
your memoir.
Yeah, coming soon.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kim. We'll talk to you soon.
I hope to run into you somewhere.
Let's get past the coronavirus, and then I will see you face to face.
Okay.
All right. You take care.
Bye.
That was fun. Kim's the best. Pat?
Sir.
How we doing?
Doing great.
Got past the tech stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We got any calls?
We sure do. I'm going to put you on with line 4 right now.
Let's do it. And no, how many lines are lit up?
3.
Let's do those 3, and then that's that.
Yep.
Best show, hi.
Hi, Tom. How are you? It's Jessica from Nebraska. How are you doing? I'm Lincoln.
I'm good. Welcome, Jessica. What's going on tonight?
Thank you. Happy belated Thanksgiving, by the way. I hope you had an all right one.
Thank you so much. I did. It's good, and I had a great Thanksgiving. I had a really good Friendsgiving. I had a good Threatsgiving, which is the double threat holiday we celebrate once a year now.
Oh, I listened to that episode twice. It was amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. That's the our special tribute to McDonald's. And we will.
I did not eat at McDonald's this Thanksgiving, but I have a long time ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, McDonald's is there for you, Jessica. You don't have to. You get to go to McDonald's. McDonald's does not have to come to you. It will always be there.
It's evergreen.
Yes. So I see on the social media that you, 2 years ago, Jessica, you would say, basketball, what's that? Who cares? Not for me. But now, look at you.
Oh, I just can't get enough.
You're hooked.
It's so wonderful. It is. I'm totally hooked. And I just dipped in at the towards the middle beginning of the playoffs, and I was like, oh, you know, I'll watch a game. I'll probably be bored. I'll turn it off. I've tried watching football. I've tried watching other stuff. We don't have pro sports here in Nebraska. So, you know, I started watching, yeah, by the end of that night, I was already ready for the next game, and it was bad, or good, I guess I should say. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm so excited for this upcoming season.
Yeah, and I was excited, excited might not be the word. I was interested to see you, on Twitter saying that you were finally wrapping your head around the mentality of a New York Knicks fan.
It's really interesting. It really gives me, it's such a weird balance of they say that, you know, this team is horrible. You know, they will say every bad thing that you can imagine. Then they take a breath and they're like, but, you know, I love this team and they might have a shot this year. And it's just like, oh, what?
This is what it's like. It's the kind of place where you say, I love this team so much and I want to see them win. And I know the times they've been good and they've been bad for two decades. But then like a player will come along and people will be like, I think this is the future and I think we're okay now. And then they reveal themselves to not be the future. And then it's just like, we suck again. And then another player comes along and is like, now we're, here we go. No, it's not. And it's just, that's the experience, it's that over and over and over.
But that's all right. I don't know. I think there's something about, and I've always felt this way about anything pretty much, but there's a dynamic that rooting for the underdog, if you go in, I don't know, it's like if you're not expecting to win, if things happen, hey, that's great. But if not, you know, it's more fun than just going for the, you know, the people with a million chips already.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I can deny it as much as I want my whole life. That dumb team is going to have some hold on me, and I want to see them be great in my lifetime. And it doesn't seem... I don't know when this is supposed to happen. I was talking to another Knicks fan. They're just like, well, if we get so-and-so and then the other, we get Russell Westbrook and Gordon Hayward. And then it's like, and then none of them are here and none of them are going to be on the Knicks. And it's just, it's a sad state of affairs, but it's one of the only teams where the fans truly are like, we believe that we don't believe. And that's kind of where they're at. It's like, we know nothing's going to happen with this, but we believe something's going to happen, but we know nothing's going to happen.
And I'm 100% on board. I can't wait. I'll be watching every Knicks game this season.
All right. Well, that's your own nightmare. I can't.
I know. I don't know why I do this, but I do.
So what else is going on tonight?
Well, at the beginning of the show, and that was an amazing interview, by the way, with Kim Gordon.
That was fun.
I bet she really appreciated not getting asked the same Sonic Youth questions that she probably usually gets. So yeah, that was really fantastic. But the opening of the show, you were talking about, you know, there's bad apples and good apples out there and we're all stuck at home. And I don't want to step on the toes of the So Far podcast because I'm a big fan of that. But I was really just curious if you had got a chance to listen to the new Volume 2 Archives box set yet. And if
the Neil Young box? I have not. I did not, I ordered it and I guess I will get one in a couple months. I was not a part of the first shipment for a physical copy. I guess I'll get it in like March, but they did send a download of it that I have not checked out yet, but I am very interested because it is what, 74 to 77?
I think it's 77 or 76.
It might just be 74, 75, 76, which is as sweet a spot as it gets for Neil Young, is 74 to 76. And I am very interested in seeing what is in that box. Did you check it out?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I spent the whole weekend, doing homework and working out and all this stuff, you know, listening to it, the week it came out, 'cause it came out on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And it's super great. I'm super happy with what he did with the kind of revamped On the Beach. And that was a super sweet spot for me. Homegrown's on it, and that Tuscaloosa live album that he already had released during it. So mm-hmm. I was already kind of familiar with those, but, what he did with On the Beach, 'cause I guess originally he was going to have the B side be the A side and the A side be the B side, which really makes sense to me, especially when you look at it chronologically from, you know, tonight, there's this dreary, horrible stuff going on. Then kind of, you know, bleeds into the, what should have been the A side. But then, you know, the B side starts with Walk On and it kind of, you know, gets back into the world. Or at least that's kind of the way I thought about it. But he really did. Yeah. He didn't quite do that. He didn't flip it so easily, but I think you're really going to enjoy what he did. He added some stuff that's unreleased. He changed the running order a little bit, and it's always going to be a masterpiece, I think, but I think you're really going to enjoy it.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. All right, Jessica, I'm going to boogie.
Awesome. Well, thanks. It's been a great show. Have a wonderful night, Tom, and I hope you have a great week.
Thank you. You too. I wish you nothing but the best.
Thanks. Same to you.
Okay, bye. Next call, please. Best show.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
This is Tim from Greenbelt. How are you, Tom?
Tim from Greenbelt. Where's Greenbelt?
It's in Maryland. It's outside of D.C., and I think everyone in D.C. knows it because it's like the last stop on the yellow line, so everyone's seen the name.
So the last stop is Greenbelt.
Yeah.
That's cool. What can I do for you, my friend?
Well, I just wanted to say that, first of all, I've been listening to the show forever and have never called before. And I just wanted to thank you for all the years that you've helped, you know, everyone that listens to the show get through what they need to get through and have a couple laughs. And I
just laughs. I've been doing this for 20 years. You got two laughs?
Well,
A couple laughs a minute. Well, you got something wrong with you then, because you shouldn't be laughing that much.
And I also wanted to say that was a great interview. I usually can't sit. I mean, you know, besides your interviews, I can't sit through like NPR interviews. That was so good.
Well, thank you so much. She's just a legend, and it's somebody who I'm just completely, consistently blown away by that, body of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good. I actually called tonight with a question for you, or I guess some advice seeking.
All right.
So I live in a community where a lot of people, you know, everyone's kind of sequestered away here because COVID. And people here are taking it seriously, so there's not much to do. And
put that green belt over your mouth, right?
Yeah. You know, when you go out there. And in this town, there's this rule that, you know, you're not supposed to let cats be outdoor cats. They're supposed to be indoor cats only. And by the nature of cats, that's pretty hard to do. And someone I know has a cat that keeps getting out, and it keeps getting noticed by people, and people are posting on the Facebook groups, I see this cat is not supposed to be out here. I just wanted to see if you had any advice on A, what to say to the Facebook group to kind of, you know, stop them from caring about this, or B, what to do about it.
So there's people are all up in arms that someone's cat is walking around the neighborhood?
Yeah.
You live in a biodome? What's going on there? How could anybody focus on that? A cat?
It's a strange little community. I don't live
in
a
cat. I saw the cat again.
Guys,
the cat's loose again. They know that cats are out. There's outside cats. How is this a rare occurrence?
Well, I guess that the reasoning is they don't want them killing all the birds. I don't know. What would you suggest either doing for the cat to, you know, stop it from complaining about not being able to go outside? Because it's very much, you know, likes to go outside. Or
this is what you do. You ready?
I'm ready.
You get a picture of that cat, right?
Okay.
And you put flyers around your neighborhood. It says, have you seen this cat? And the picture of the cat on it. And then underneath it, it goes, yeah, it's a cat. It's walking around the neighborhood. Calm down, everybody. Plenty of birds to go. There's no way this one cat's going to kill all the birds.
That is actually great advice. And next, you know, the people are going to write about these flyers. So that'll give them something else to...
wonder who did the flyers.
Yeah.
And then you put flyers up. Have you seen this flyer? And it's a picture of the flyer.
Oh, my goodness.
And you just keep going on and on and on until people are like... They go, all right, fine. We'll stop complaining about the cat.
Well, the best part of that is I think it would actually happen like that. It would just go on forever.
Wow. Seems like you might have to see what happens.
I will. Right,
let me know what happens with that.
I will. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Then goodbye. Hang up on him. Final call?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, who's this?
This is Don in Atlantic City.
Don in Atlantic City.
John.
John in Atlantic City.
Yes, yes, yes.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, my friend. How about yourself?
I'm all right. You hanging out at that weird narrow restaurant?
Oh, gosh, no.
What is that place? You know the one I'm talking about.
What kind of food do they serve?
I don't know, like schnitzel. It's like, I think it's like a Bavarian place or something at the end of the boardwalk.
Oh man, I'm not familiar. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like Peter Luger.
It's not Peter Luger's. What can I do for you, John?
I was wondering, and I missed the beginning of the show. I heard you touched on it, the Mike Tyson Victor Jones thing. I was wondering if you saw the fight before it, Nate Robinson against one of the YouTube brothers, the Logan.
It's Jake Paul. No, I was talking about it. I talked about this. It's a travesty.
Yeah, I mean, he got like annihilated, right?
Look, I didn't see it. I can't watch that stuff. My mom won't let me watch fights.
I get it. I had to watch it in my basement.
Why, your mom?
Yeah, my dad, too. He's an ex-cop.
You ever fight your dad?
Fist fight, yeah. Verbally fight, no.
Oh, so you didn't verbally fight him, but you did fist fight him? It's usually the opposite.
No, I looked him dead in the eyes, and we both knew we were going to go at it. So,
did you take him? Who won the fight? It's hard to fight a cop. He'll arrest you at the end of the fight, right?
Yeah, he brutally lost the fight.
You beat your dad, and he handcuffs you. Because you just beat a cop up.
Oh, an ex-cop.
Assaulting an officer. He'll still bring you in. He'll call one of his buddies. Look, John, between you and me, what's the worst thing your dad ever did as a cop?
Oh, man. Like, one time?
What comes home? What comes home? What comes home? We'll envelope with cash, right?
One time he fought a kid that was like, you know, young. And that kid was me.
All right, hang up on this guy. This guy's driving me nuts. This guy's got his own comedy show worked out here. Where are we at, Pat?
Calls blocked.
Good. I want to say this. We're working through the tech stuff. I appreciate it. I appreciate Pat, and I appreciate Jason. I appreciate Brett. Everybody's working hard to keep the best show going, and we're working the bugs out. And before long, there ain't going to be no bugs. It's going to be like Creep Show, E.G. Marshall and Creep Show. Wait, no, there were bugs in that. He got consumed by the bugs. Forget that. It'll be like something without bugs. And I say to you, if you want to support the best show, you get that new best show sticker, patreon.com/thebestshow. Everybody at the $5 or more level this week will get a new sticker, American flag best show sticker. Patreon.com/thebestshow. And you go to, where do you go to? I don't know. Go to patreon.com.
Patreon.com/thebestshow.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's what I just said. Hey, this guy. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to get so much grief. Hey, man, it's Jason. I kind of didn't get enough airtime this week. I know it's coming. Am I wrong?
I've already drafted the text.
Am I wrong, Pat?
It's a couple of texts.
I wasn't sure if you were talking or if Jason was back on. I got a little confused.
Mm-hmm.
Look, that's how they do it in West Virginia.
You gotta give me airtime, Tom.
Is that Tom or is that you?
Hey, man. It's me, Jason.
Okay, this is Jason.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going, Pat?
That's
Tom.
Okay.
No, look, Jason's from, he's simple. He's become mining folk. This is how they do it. When they're down in the company, they got the company bucks that the mining company gives them. They'll get paid in U.S. currency.
Canaries.
What's that?
We get paid in canaries.
Yes, they get paid in canaries and anything from the general store.
Yeah,
they could get new jumpsuits, little work uniforms.
You can't shop at Kmart. It has to be at the general store.
Yeah,
I'd love to shop at Kmart, but I can't.
Oh boy, I wish I could. These mining bucks don't work here. I guess I could work for you guys for a bit, and maybe that would let me get one of these Baby Ruth bars. What could I do to get – how much work would I have to do to get one of them Baby Ruth bars? And be like, well, I don't know. You could apply for a job here. Be like, so do I, like, dig for my for coal here at the Kmart? How does that work? Like, no, it's – literally, you'd work at the store, sir. All right. Well, where are your hard hats and your mining helmets, sir? You won't do any if you work here. You will just work as an employee of Kmart. Well, I'd like to work here, and I'm pretty good down in the hole. I just want to say, I'm fine being the first one down. No, I look. You'll get more airtime next week.
Thank you. I've deleted the texts.
Keep your drawers on.
All right,
my friends. I'm going to wrap it up. The show that never ends is ending tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will be back next week. And maybe, I don't know, do we have out? We don't have outro music, do we?
I have some that bumper music cue.
Why don't you play it?
Here we go.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.